question.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
If you're expecting to hear the sweet, sultry tones of Nick Clayton, our Chiefs superfan, or Pod Vader, then you're going to be sorely disappointed. But I do. I'm Andrew. I'm the Jets superfan. I have three superfans here. One from the Giants, that would be Sam. One from the Texans, that would be James. And one from the Denver Broncos, that would be Louie. You're going to hear all three of them in just a minute. But the draft is coming up. And I couldn't let the draft go by without getting a podcast in a couple of days before. So we're going to talk about a couple of teams to keep an eye on. And we're also going to go through the news. But first, since I probably should have done this about 40 seconds ago, I'm just going to get to it now. Let me introduce to you who you're going to be hearing. First, we have Sam from the Giants. How are you doing, Sam?
I am in the Jets Superfan house. I'm ready to record. What's going on, guys?
I have him locked up in the closet on the other side of the room. Then we have Louie from the Denver Broncos. What's going on, Lou?
Everything's good, Andrew.
And what's up, James?
Oh, not a whole lot. Glad I'm not in that great, loving Jets-Giants environment up there.
Just letting you know, it's a lot worse than what it sounds like. I'm only feeding Sam about once every couple of hours, and especially if he makes a positive comment about the Jets, then maybe he'll get something like an ice cream bar. But otherwise, he's suffering in there. But something tells me he's just counting his rings and that he'll be okay.
Yeah. If you picture, I'm the Marjorie Terrell of the Next Stand Up podcast.
Confess. So I think a good place to start here with everything going around in the NFL would be, I really don't want to talk about it, because even when the news first broke about this whole Deflategate thing, I just didn't want to hear about it. I didn't think the story really was compelling.
But now that Brady's been suspended for 4 games, there is something that is worth talking about. And that something would be the possibility of the suspension affecting the way the standings are going to look next year. James, do you think there's any way that that's a reality, that this Brady suspension for 4 games is going to hinder the Patriots when it comes to winning the AFC title?
No, I don't think it will. There's going to be a lot made of it because 2 of the 4 games that he's suspended for are divisional games, but they're both at home. In fact, of the 4, they have 3 home games, only 1 away, and that's their season opener against the Cardinals, which was going to be a tough game anyway. If you look at the Vegas lines, they've gone from about 10.5 wins as their over-under down to about 10. So nobody really seems to think that, you know, 4 games from Tom Brady is going to make that big of a difference. It might cost them 1 win. They might be 2-2 coming out of the 4 games instead of 3-1. But I didn't really see him being 4-0 out of these games anyway. And I also don't see, the Dolphins and Bills to contend for the title of the AFC East. Andrew, your Jets probably have the best shot, and I still don't really think that they're within, you know, just 1 win of the New England Patriots, which is all that this suspension is likely going to cost them.
Well, I'm looking at the Patriots schedule right now. They open at Arizona, so you figure without Brady there, it'll be a pretty difficult game for the Patriots to win. But then they're at home the next 3 games against Miami, your Texans, and Buffalo. So I guess the happiest out of anybody here is probably you, James, as you guys don't have to see Tom Brady again this year. But last year, you guys only put up 6 points on them anyway, so maybe Brock Osweiler has something in store that Brian Hoyer didn't.
Well, he's got a bigger bank account than Brian Hoyer, that's for sure. we'll also have Lamar Miller. It will be great not to have to face Tom Brady. Not going to lie about that. That's probably the one game where I see them having a much better shot. But, you know, there are 3 home games. The Patriots are probably going to be favored by at least a field goal, if not a little bit more. You know, with Brady back there, they'd have been favored by about a touchdown against those 3 teams.
Well, Sam, I know you're never concerned with the Patriots because you guys just seem to beat them every time you play. But what's your opinion on this whole Tom Brady situation, you go in any direction. It doesn't matter whether it be with the lawsuit, with the, how it's going to affect the race, with how it, if it's going to affect the whole organization.
You know, I actually think missing four games for Tom Brady isn't the worst thing at this stage in his career. He comes in, he gets a little fresher, he stays fresher for the playoffs, and, you know, somebody that's getting up in age, sitting down for the first four games of the season kind of makes sense. This is a Patriots team that went 10-6 with Matt Castle, so it's not like Bill Belichick doesn't know how to win with a less-than-ideal quarterback. So, you know, I don't think it really matters in any way. I think it's Tom Brady might look at this at the end of the season when he hits his stride a little later. You know, I don't know if it's anecdotal evidence or my memory is actually correct, but Tom Brady seems to have, towards the end of the season, he seems to tail off and maybe into the playoffs a little too recently. So maybe that this is good. It keeps his legs a little fresher. He doesn't have to get hit as much. You know, the Patriots had offensive line problems last season. It gives them a chance to figure out their offensive line the first couple of games of the season without worrying about him getting injured. So at the end of the day, we might look back at this four-game suspension and think Roger Goodell has been in cahoots with Robert Kraft this whole time, and now they have an actual excuse to sit Brady for four games.
Goodell, Ed, and Robert Kraft in cahoots. I don't think I've heard that take on Deflategate yet. But yeah, I think this whole Deflategate thing is being made a much bigger deal out of than it really is. And you could argue that's what the NFL actually wants. They just want to be in the news stream every day of the year, no matter what it is, good or bad. It doesn't seem to be affecting the NFL's bottom line that they're just vilifying their top star. We're sitting here talking about this while the NBA playoffs are going on, while the NHL playoffs are going on, while the Major League Baseball season started a couple of weeks ago. And I mean, the Masters just happened. And yet we're talking about a bunch of deflated footballs. But I want to, as the resident Jets fan here, I guess I should give what my take on what's going on in the AFC East. If this happened last year, if the original suspension stood, I would make an argument that the Patriots would be in trouble in terms of the division. But with all the factors in the AFC East this year, especially the schedule, every team in the AFC East had an extremely easy schedule as they faced the AFC South and the NFC East were the two divisions that they had to face on their schedule. But this year, they're facing two much more difficult divisions. They're playing the AFC North and they're playing the NFC West. Those two divisions could be argued are two of the strongest in football. If you want to get even more micro about it, you could go through the teams. The Dolphins already seem to be in complete dysfunction, whether it be Rashad Jones threatening to hold out, even though he's already the third highest paid safety in football, or this report that came out today that the Miami Dolphins players are pretty bewildered by what's going on with Ndamukong Suh. He's not showing up to voluntary workouts that he's working out on his own, and he's like the highest paid player in football, so that's sort of pissing them off. And then you have the Bills. I like their roster, but as a guy who watched Rex Ryan coach for 4 or 5 years, 6 years, actually, I just can't see him being able to take over that division with Tyrod Taylor playing quarterback, with a shaky offensive line, Sammy Watkins at wide receiver, but not much else. And then that's not even mentioning the defense, which is usually Buffalo's calling card. They have a ton of holes on that defense, whether it be the defensive line or inside linebacker. And then my Jets, whose starting quarterback right now is most likely Geno Smith. And yeah, I still think Fitzpatrick is going to come back. There are other holes on this roster, whether it be the offensive line or the secondary outside pass rush. If this was last year, I would say it's a big deal. This year, I still think the Patriots are going to win.
I think it's going to be not a big problem, but it could potentially be a big problem because, listen, if Brady plays those four games realistically, you'd assume they'd go 4-0 or at least 3-1, maybe lose to Arizona. But if Brady doesn't play and they somehow go 2-2, 3-1, that might not impact the AFC East as much as it will the whole AFC as a whole. Because last year, home field was big, was very important. So if they lose an extra game and they might lose home field out of it, it might potentially be a big deal, especially because teams like the Texans, the Colts, Bengals, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, Oakland, they all improved. Jets also. So these teams are up-and-coming teams that could potentially have the same record as the Patriots, and if they lose that one extra game, it could end up hurting them.
I think one other factor that we're not even talking about right now is what happens if Jimmy Garoppolo comes out and just lights it up in the first four games. Then you have a four-game sample, regular season sample, of Jimmy Garoppolo playing well, And then the Patriots could just hold on to him and ask for a first-round pick from some team out there. And the way that teams are shelling out for quarterbacks this offseason, or at least some teams, that's a discussion we're going to get into later. I could see a team giving up a first-round pick for Garoppolo, especially with everything else going on, whether it be James' Texans giving Osweiler $18 million or the Eagles trading up all the way to number two to pick up a third quarterback. I see Jimmy Garoppolo playing well and then some team giving up an asset for him, and everything's all good in Patriots land. Yay.
I understand that's a theory and that could happen, but I'm sure Bill Belichick and the team isn't really like thinking about that right now. I think more of the season ahead that it could potentially be a problem.
Let's move on to another story right now, and that would be Sam Bradford. So Sam Bradford is threatening to not show up to mandatory camp, according to Adam Schefter. He believes that he was sort of hoodwinked by the Philadelphia organization. He wants to be the guy in Philadelphia, and he's very upset with the trade that went down a couple of days ago with Cleveland, where it looks like they're going to pick up Carson Wentz. I've never seen a guy making $18 million be this angry before, James. Do you think Bradford has legit beef here, or do you think he's just being a little baby?
I think he's being a baby about this. And if you look at his career, he's never had a competition to face for a starting position. And so, you know, back to his days in the Rams, when Chip Kelly handpicked him to come across, he's going to go down, you know, infamously as the highest paid rookie. And that has a condition that he was the number one pick prior to the whole slotting structure went into place. By the time this Eagles contract will be done, he's going to have made over $100 million in his entire career. And he's currently sitting just inside the top 30 of highest paid NFL players of all time. It's just him, you know, whining about how, wait a minute, somebody might finally be catching on to the fact that I'm not that good. I don't know why it's taken so many years for people to realize that Sam Bradford's really not that good. His agent went on to the SiriusXM show, which is an absolute great interview. Listen, if you have 4 or 5 minutes to find that. And he basically said, you know, Sam Bradford proved that he was able to put up average numbers that trended better in the last 7 games of last year, and that he was coming off 2 ACL surgeries and managed to play 14 games. You know, that should scream that in the past 3 seasons, he's only been able to play, you know, about 14 games. It's not great for longevity. The other fun thing, since he signed this contract with Philadelphia nearly 2 months ago, they've already paid him about $5.5 million due to the signing bonus. So if you want to think of how much he's being paid to sit there and whine about how he's not getting paid enough or getting a fair shake, he's being paid $100,000 per day on average since signing his latest contract.
Oh, my God. And it's funny you bring up the SiriusXM interview, because I was going to mention that, too. It's a great listen because there's just so much to dissect there. My favorite part of the whole interview was when his agent, Tom Condon, comes up and goes, he was the first pick in the draft, and his pro day was the finest I've ever seen in terms of accuracy. He's bringing up his pro day from 6 years ago, and I think that's just like – it just encapsulates that – Sam Bradford, at least his value peaked at that point. Or maybe not, because the Eagles gave him $18 million. Sam, you're the Giants super fan, so you know you have a window into the Philadelphia Eagles thinking in some sense. So what do you make of this whole situation?
I mean, to Sam Bradford call in and say that he's upset and he's threatening not to come to OTAs, and who the other end of the phone goes, so? I mean, like, the Eagles don't care. They just traded up. He's not going to be starting. Even if the person they pick, if it's Carson Wentz and they feel he can't start the first week, it's probably going to be Chase Daniel. You're not upset about that. I just think the Eagles don't really care. And I mean, I don't think they're really going to be competitive, because I think their team had more depth than just a Carson Wentz away. And at this point, they've traded a bunch of picks. They've thrown a lot of money at a position where, you know, they say if you have a few quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks. If you have 3 quarterbacks, you certainly have no quarterbacks. So as a Giants fan, and it really kind of makes me happy, but I think the Eagles are going to be bad, and I don't think they're going to be good for a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Well, if Carson Wentz pans out, then they might have made the move, but that's a big gamble to make on a guy who is coming from Division II. And I actually really like Carson Wentz. He would be the guy I would take if I was the Rams sitting at one. But that still doesn't really absolve Philadelphia.
I mean, no good. How good can Carson Wentz be? Who on that offense is going to help him be that good?
Well, they're hoping that they'll be able to fix that problem next year or the or year after by the time he has to play. But yeah, I get your point. Like, they traded a ton of assets, and
I mean,
their skill guys.
How are they going to get? How are they going to get better next year? They traded those picks. It doesn't make sense. And you're going to see, I think, a quarterback who may have skills get hit more because he has nobody getting open and get hit with this terrible start of his career. And it'll be interesting to see if he can bounce back because they're really giving him no help.
Well, maybe they're thinking they could trade Bradford if he plays well this year. Maybe some team will give up something good for him. Louis, do you think there's any chance that maybe even the Broncos trade for him this year?
Well, before I get to that, I just want to talk a little bit about this Bradford situation. If I was the Eagles, first of all, I would want to trade Sam Bradford. And if I was Sam Bradford, I understand why you would request a trade. When he was a free agent, if he knew about the Carson Wentz trade beforehand, I'm sure he wouldn't sign with Philadelphia. So that's the reason why I understand, like, he would want to get traded. Second of all, if I was Philadelphia, you paid Chase Daniels $21 million to be your backup. So you have that as somewhat as a chip of, okay, you could start Chase Daniels, and then when you want to start Wentz the year after, in the middle of the year, you could do that. You gave up a bunch of picks to trade up for number two. Why wouldn't you try to get a pick back by trading Sam Bradford? I don't really see the value of him playing 1 year. And then, okay, yeah, you could possibly trade him next year for a little higher pick than you could this year, but I just think it's a fit for both parties.
But what's the market for Sam Bradford? Like, who was going to go out and get him, even in free agency? It seemed to me like the Eagles were just kind of bidding against themselves. I mean, what was he going to do, go to Cleveland? Maybe reunite with the Rams this time in Los Angeles instead of going back to going to a different team? You still have, like, Ryan Fitzpatrick out on the market. If Ryan Fitzpatrick can't, find a deal, I think Sam Bradford, who has – you can maybe argue higher upside just because he's younger, but he's demonstrated that he's a lower caliber quarterback than Ryan Fitzpatrick over the past couple seasons. He's a much bigger injury risk. It might just be that there's not a market to try and go out and get Sam Bradford, and that's ignoring the fact that the Eagles would just have to eat that $11 million signing bonus. They'd have like a 20-some-odd million dead money hit if they would trade him this year. I mean, he's kind of stuck in a similar situation to Colin Kaepernick, but his contract is even more untenable than Colin Kaepernick.
And that's probably the biggest issue that many fans aren't looking at. I mean, it sounds all good to be able to just trade a guy, not having to worry about the contract. But yeah, if you're Howie Roseman, how are you going to go up to Jeffrey Lurie and go, oh, remember that contract we signed about 2 months ago where you gave Sam Bradford $18 million? Yeah. Forget about that. I changed my mind. Let's try and trade him and basically pay $11 million for whatever draft pick you're going to get in return. So I think this is a very similar situation to what the Jets and Fitzpatrick are going through, in that both sides need each other, and maybe they just haven't come to terms with that yet. I think the Eagles have come to terms with it. I mean, they know. I mean, ideally, they want Bradford to be their bridge. They want Bradford to be their one-year guy and be able to go into the year after with Wentz or Daniel. But again, yeah, who's going to give up the pick for Bradford? And Bradford is just hurting himself, in my opinion, right now with his antics. I guess antics is a bit of a strong word, but with his stance, because this doesn't scream team leader to me. One of the one of the quotes from the SiriusXM interview with Tom Condon, Sam Bradford's agent, was that Sam's a competitor and he wants to go someplace that he's the man. I don't think you could make a more oxymoronic statement in the span of like 10 words than what he did right there. I don't really need to spell the case out for you guys, but if he's so competitive, then why is he getting his panties in a bun for having Philadelphia getting a quarterback with the second pick? So I just think he's hurting his reputation around the league. And if he doesn't play well this year, I don't see any team giving him a starting job without competition, which is what he wants anyway. So he's just hurting himself. Since we're talking about quarterbacks, and it seems that's always what we're talking about in terms of the NFL, I think that there's an interesting discussion to be had, especially because we have Louis here, whose team has Mark Sanchez starting a quarterback right now. And I could tell you that that's not the thing you want leading your depth chart at that position. Neither is Geno Smith. So I'm in that boat too. And then we have James, whose team went out and spent $18 million on Louis' former quarterback, Brock Osweiler. My question to you guys, and I'd like to get input from all you guys, you too, Sam, because you guys still have Eli Manning at the helm, but you're paying him a ridiculous amount of money to be, what, one of the top 12 quarterbacks in football. Are teams starting to change their philosophy when it comes to the quarterback position? They still believe that it's the most important position. Watching Denver win the Super Bowl last year with the worst quarterback play in the league, arguably, are teams starting to realize that you either have to have top shelf quarterback play, or you could have slightly less than mediocre, mediocre quarterback play, but you have to be paying him cheap money so you can invest that money elsewhere on the team? Because the old adage that you need a quarterback, but it seems to me that the evidence suggests this past year that maybe you really don't.
Well, with Denver this year, I mean, they had one of the best defenses of all time in the NFL, and they were still, you know, barely got into the Super Bowl against the New England Patriots. So, yeah, you can definitely get there with a very strong defense. But, you know, why we went out and signed Brock Osweiler to a giant four-year contract is that that's what Houston has been trying to do. They've been trying to build a great defense. And, you know, you've got the greatest defensive player in the game with J.J. Watt. Without an offense, you know, not to sound too much like Yogi Berra or, you know, John Madden here, but you can't win the game unless you score points. And it's kind of asking a lot for your defense to not only prevent the other team from scoring any points, but then to go out there and win the game themselves. Not this past year, but 2 years ago, I believe the Texans had two games where the defense not only outscored the offense, but the defense had the game-winning score. So that clearly is not a sustainable model for winning a lot of football games. It's important to have a good offense. I don't think we're at the point where you have to have, you know, the greatest quarterback in the league, but you also can't have somebody like Brian Hoyer out there turning the ball over five times in a game. Or, you know, even Carson Palmer went out there, has one bad game. It just happens to be the playoff game and your season is over. So I think teams are getting to the point where they're willing to overspend to have a little bit of safety at quarterback. And yeah, you know, Denver didn't put up great passing stats, but you still had Peyton Manning back there who was able to make the pre-snap reads. And, you know, there's some value there that can't just be measured with, you know, yards per attempt or touchdown passes.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what James said. If you're not going to have a great quarterback, he can't make mistakes. That's the difference. That's what Peyton Manning did in the Super Bowl. He just didn't make mistakes. You saw earlier in the season when he did make mistakes, the Broncos were getting beat. So if you're not going to have one of the top quarterbacks in the league, you can't be throwing interceptions. And I think it's something maybe a little bit more that I think the way we view safe quarterbacks in the league is fairly dumb. I think people were viewing Brian Hoyer as a safe quarterback for a while, even though all the stats were pointing to him throwing a ton of interceptions. And I think maybe some offenses, instead of that safety from the quarterback, will try to introduce a different wrinkle into their offense that could help. You know, with the run game, maybe short passes. There's just, I think we're going to see offensive coordinators do more things to account for their lesser ability at quarterback. So I think it'll be interesting to see.
Louis?
Yeah, my thought process on it is that it's very circumstantial. Every team's roster is constructed differently. And usually on the free agent market, there's not so many premium quarterbacks you could actually pay for. Not a lot of franchise caliber quarterbacks go on the free agent market. I understand what teams are trying to do, but it really depends year by year. For instance, with the Ryan Fitzpatrick situation, I think the Jets played it well in saying that there's no really other suitable franchises that would pay Fitzpatrick that kind of money. But in a year that Fitzpatrick would be a free agent and there are much more teams that are willing to spend money on a quarterback, I think they will. So it really depends mostly on the year and the type of players available and which franchises need the quarterback and which franchises don't.
Right. So I agree with most of what you guys are saying, but the bottom line is you look at what the Jets organization is doing with Fitzpatrick versus what Houston did with Osweiler. I think that you sort of have to have a price. I mean, yeah, Osweiler does. There's the element of the unknown with Osweiler that there's a shot that he becomes a legit franchise quarterback, and maybe that's what justifies the $18 million price tag. But a guy like Nick, like our Chiefs superfan, believed that the Jets should just give Fitzpatrick what he wants because competent quarterback play is worth so much in this league. I disagree because you look at Fitzpatrick's a perfect example. You put two top-notch wide receivers around him in Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker, and you put him in a system where he gets the ball out quick, the tall wide receivers, try and limit his mistakes, and you have a shot. And I don't think that spending $18 to $20 million on a guy that you're not asking him to do so much, and maybe a rookie or a second-year guy who hasn't really gotten a shot might be able to do the same or similar things that Fitzpatrick has done. And I think that's a gamble that Houston is taking. Yeah, they have Hopkins, and it looks like they're going to take a receiver rather early in this draft. And maybe that makes Osweiler look a lot better than he actually is. But Osweiler had those guys last year in Thomas and Sanders, and he still got benched for a washed-up Peyton Manning. I'd argue it wasn't justified that he was benched, but he was still benched. The coaching staff who saw him day in and day out put him on the bench for a guy who couldn't throw the ball outside the numbers more than 10 yards. I just think it's a very risky proposition to spend that much money on a quarterback when there are other avenues to win football games. It might be more difficult than just finding a star quarterback, but finding that star quarterback is something that doesn't come along very often. And you're going to have to take a shot on a guy once in a while. And that's what Texans did with Osweiler. But I think it's much more likely that it ends up in a disaster than it does with him holding up the Lombardi.
I mean, as your quarterback gets better, your margin for error also gets bigger. And you saw that with Green Bay last year. As far as they got, they were really doing it without Jordy Nelson, with Randall Cobb, who wasn't Randall Cobb, you know, really just Aaron Rodgers making up for all the deficits on the team. So you have to look at it like that. How much do you have in terms of your margin for error for the rest of your field? And that amount is how good of a quarterback you need, I think. And that's what you have to figure out. That's what Denver figured out last year. It said, you know what, our margin for error, it's huge because our defense is the best and it's historically good. And you saw what they did last year, and that's why they were able to have, you know, a subpar quarterback and still win a Super Bowl.
I also think the benching of Brock for Peyton, I mean, they were going to look for any excuse whatsoever to get Peyton back in for the playoffs. It just happened that Brock had a very bad game in week 17. And so they didn't have to go through this drama of, well, how can you possibly sit Peyton Manning for what's probably going to be the last playoffs of his career? You know, John Elway, a former quarterback, and he's not going to let Gary Kubiak just make that decision or, you know, have Peyton Manning sit, because then he'd get crushed on the other side if Denver would lose, even if Osweiler had a competent game. From the Houston side, you know, you've got Rick Smith, who's slowly losing a little bit of player personnel power over to Bill, to the coach. And so he has to make some move now to basically solidify and say, you know, not only do I need this power, but, you know, how about just not fire me if we have another bad season or another season that doesn't meet expectations? With this deal, we're definitely overpaying Brock for the first year, but we have him locked up for up to 4 years. And so if you bring in a quarterback, you know, we were just going through, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Brian Hoyer, you know, in a very small season, a 16-game season, can you do a fair an accurate balance of what that quarterback can really do in your system? Kirk Cousins is a great example. Instead of signing him to a really long-term deal, they're going to franchise him for a year. That may end up costing them money down the road, but it's going to increase their sample size. The only way for Houston to have gotten a good sample size on Brock Osweiler is to sign him to a deal, obviously more than a year, and to let him, you know, maybe flounder a little bit in the first season and pick it up in the second, so that by the time you get to the third, fourth years on that contract, you're ahead in the game as far as what you're paying him versus what the new market rate for the quarterbacks are, because that number is also going to steadily increase.
Right. But my concern would be that they didn't really, like Rick Smith didn't really think this out in the sense of, let's say Osweiler does not play well this year. And yeah, you would want a larger sample size than 16 games for to see if he's your guy. But who says Rick Smith has more than 16 games? And if Osweiler doesn't play well and Rick Smith gets fired, is Bill O'Brien tethered to Brock Osweiler? I mean, he sort of has to be, right? Because he has guaranteed money in the second year. And then that creates a whole organizational dysfunction, which is why I think it's just a great example of why it's so important to have cohesion everywhere throughout your organization, from your owner to your general manager, to your coach, to your quarterback. Do you believe Smith has that type of assurance from Bob McNair, or do you think he's playing with fire here?
I think he has the assurance from Bob McNair now that he's gone out and addressed the offense this offseason. One of the big criticisms of Rick Smith was that he wouldn't go out and make a big offensive signing to kind of help out back there. We were just relying on Arian Foster, who hadn't completed a full season in, quite a while. He went out and spent money on Vince Wilfork, but he was just kind of viewed as a lame duck guy that, didn't have any really good moves. But now with the Brock signing, the Lamar Miller signing, we pull in a wide receiver in the first round. And if he could lock Hopkins up, prior to him, needing to get franchise tag, that's going to buy him a lot of time and a lot more patience from Bob McNair.
And since we're still on the quarterback position and we have you here, Louie, what's your, your panic meter right now in terms of the Denver Broncos quarterback situation?
I'm not nervous, but I'm not expecting them to make a splash. And, there's not so many people that are available. I honestly think the Kaepernick deal is pretty much done. I actually think it's going to get done by the draft, contingent on the 49ers drafting a quarterback early, either Lynch or Hackenberg or Cook or one of those guys. And I'm okay going to the season with Kaepernick because, again, with the defense that we have, we don't need him to do that much. We just need him to be competent. And listen, last year he did struggle, but he was with a very bad team. And with the resources they have in Denver, I think Kaepernick would be a pretty good fit over there.
As for you, Sam, I know you're all over there in your closet counting your rings and that Eli Manning got you, but is there any chance that the Giants sort of look to the future and draft a quarterback, or are they okay with Ryan Nassib backing up Eli?
I was actually just thinking about this earlier, thinking about the draft, and it would be interesting to see them, maybe pick one in the later rounds. If Christian Hackenberg starts dropping and they think in 2-3 years they could rebuild this guy and, move on from Eli, or somebody like Vernon Adams, later in the draft, I think they could do it. There's some guys that have like really high upside and, but their floor is not being an NFL player. So I wouldn't mind them taking one of those guys in the later rounds and stashing him. But I think, we're with Eli for the next 2-4 years down the line at the least.
And as for the Jets, I mean, I've been quoted in other spots talking about this position, but I don't think I've really gave it out my thoughts recently on this podcast. Fitzpatrick is still the guy, and I think he's going to come back for about $9-10 million. But as for the draft, as if the draft is coming up, everybody's question is, what's going on with the Jets and Paxton Lynch? Is there a way the Jets take Lynch at 20 or even trade up? And my answer to that would be, I don't think there is a player in the first round that I would be more disappointed if the Jets took than Paxton Lynch. After taking Bryce Petty last year in the fourth round and having Geno Smith, who never got a fair shake with actual NFL caliber wide receivers, I don't see how taking a guy coming out of Memphis, who is by all accounts a very raw prospect, taking him at number 20 while you have holes at outside linebacker, at cornerback, at offensive line, I don't see how you can justify taking a guy like that when they're this year more than most in the middle rounds. There are guys like Cardale Jones and like Christian Hackenberg and Dak Prescott and Jacoby Brissett. There are quarterbacks who have promise, and taking a guy like Lynch in the first round would really, really make me upset. What about you, Louie? Your roster seems to be more set than the Jets roster. So Would you be in favor of trading up for Lynch?
I would not be in favor for trading up for Lynch for most of the reasons that you said. And I actually think Lynch is going to go before 20. I don't know if maybe Cleveland or San Francisco trades down and picks up Lynch in the middle picks like 15, 16, 17. But, yeah, I'm not a big fan of Paxton Lynch. Yes, he has the measurables. He's big, tall, athletic, big arm. But, yeah, like you said, the offense that they ran in Memphis is a one-read type offense. They didn't really play the best competition. And we also have holes. We also need linebackers and defensive ends and people expiring contracts next year, Emmanuel Sanders. So we have to look forward to the future a little bit also. So I also like a couple quarterbacks. Like you said, I like Dak Prescott and Jacoby Brissett. I would be pretty disappointed if Denver takes Lynch at 31.
James, do you think there's any chance that the Texans take a quarterback in the middle rounds, or do you think that would sort of create a Sam Bradford situation in Houston?
I don't think they'll end up taking another quarterback in the middle rounds. I mean, we, for some reason, signed Brandon Weeden to a two-year deal. And then on top of that, a couple years back, we took Tom Savage as kind of a developmental quarterback. So unless Bill O'Brien can convince them that, hey, you know, I really want Christian Hackenberg and he's fallen to us, you know, in the third round, which I doubt he'll make it that far, even though, you know, he'll probably get taken in the second, but it would probably take, you know, third or fourth round for O'Brien to even start having the conversation about Hackenberg. We only have 7 draft picks this year. We have a lot of things that we would like to address with those 7. You know, maybe if we were in a situation like Denver where we had 10 draft picks this year, or, you know, the Titans where we were picking 6 times in the first 76 picks, we could reach and grab another quarterback. But I think we're happy with the developmental prospect of Tom Savage.
And since we're already talking about the draft, we're just going to do a short little preview right now. Just ask this question, which I think is a good question. Every year there are a couple of teams that sort of control the way the draft is going to go. I have a couple of teams on the top of my head, but right now I'm going to go to you, Louis. Is there a team that you look at that jumps off the page to you that's sort of going to control everything that goes around in the draft?
Yeah, I think potentially Cleveland is a very interesting team to look at. They already traded down from 8 to 2, and they stockpiled a bunch of picks from Philadelphia. And I think they're looking to do the same. I think they're one of the worst constructed rosters in the league. And I think the move would be to try to trade down. There's a lot of teams that would try to trade up, especially if Tunsil and Stanley are picked between 1 through 7. So a team might want to look, trade up to get possibly Coughlin from Michigan State. So they're a team that needs as many picks as possible, and they already show that they're willing to trade down once from 2 to 8, and I could see them easily trading down again from 8 to maybe 15 with Tennessee or another team that needs an offensive line, and I think they could really be a fun team to watch on draft day.
I'd be concerned if I were the Browns, because they that seems to be what they always do. And yeah, it is the analytically smart move to make. The draft is really a crapshoot, and you want to have as many opportunities as possible with your draft picks. But this draft, more than a lot, most drafts I can remember, seems to be there are 8 to 10 guys that like are blue chip guys. And after that, from the middle of the first round on until maybe like the end of the second, everyone's sort of interchangeable. So yeah, I could see why the Browns would want to just get a bunch of those guys. But right now they're also in a position to take a guy like a Ronnie Stanley or Ezekiel Elliott. James, if you're running this front office, would you be taking the route of let's get the stud? And yeah, we have a couple of extra picks in the middle rounds already. Or would you trade down again and just try to fill up this roster that has holes at quarterback, running back, receiver, tackle, defensive line, linebacker, safety? It seems there are holes everywhere on this roster.
Yeah, I mean, for that reason, I would probably stick with the one top 10 pick, just get a very big impact player, and then from then on, just try and stockpile the picks. It's going to be very interesting because they have the Moneyball guy, the Mets Moneyball guy in their front office now. So he's probably going to look to trade back a couple more times and take a very analytics-based approach. What I'm going to be, or the team that I'm really going to be curious about, not just because they're a division rival, but because they have, you know, a bevy of options just like the Browns, are the Tennessee Titans. They have, as I mentioned, 6 picks in the top 76. They have 3 second round picks. They could very easily trade back up into the top 10. You know, they have more than enough ammo to do that from 15. They could also trade back from 15 and get a couple more, you know, add to their stockpile of picks. What I think makes the most sense for them, though, is right now they've got the second pick in the second round of the draft. They should be targeting a team like the Arizona Cardinals, who don't have a lot of picks this year. I think they only have 6 picks in total this year. Offer them their second, or the second pick in the second round, as well as like a 5th round pick, to try and move up and get a second first round pick. The reason I would do that is because any first round pick, you can get a team 5th option on that player. So if you do hit another superstar at the late ends of the first round, you have another year of control, a relatively cheap control for that player.
That's actually a very, very good point. I remember the Vikings did something similar with that when they took Teddy Bridgewater a couple of years ago, just to hope that he pans out and they get a 5th-year option on him. I look at Tennessee's roster, and the tackle position is clearly the number one need right now. And I think they are in the perfect position at 15 right now, because either Conklin or Decker are definitely going to be there. The most entertaining thing would be is if they somehow trade up to about like 8, whether it be 8 or 7, and get the guy they want all along, whether it be Tunsil or Stanley. And then John Robinson looks like a genius. He's sort of playing Madden. It seems like that's something what a franchise Madden guy would do. Sam, is there a team that you're looking at as sort of an interesting team to look at in terms of draft position?
I mean, I think the biggest winner of all these trades that went down before the draft is the Cowboys, because, you know, they weren't going to take those 2 quarterbacks anyways, I don't think, and now they'll really have the pick of who they want. They can pretty much target whoever's going to be the best player in the draft and take him. I think they do end up with Joey Bosa. I just think he's a real impact rusher off the edge, and you need that in today's NFL, and I think he's really good. I wouldn't be surprised if they took DeForest Buckner. I mean, the more I watch him, the more I'm hoping he drops to 10 to the Giants, because he's going to be a really, really good player for a really long time. Where they might get Jalen Ramsey, and that's the scariest thing if you're a Giants fan, because Jalen Ramsey looks like one of those guys who is just going to mess with your quarterback and your receivers for years to come. He's going to be able to do anything on the field. And, you know, they're really happy, because they're pretty much guaranteed that 2 quarterbacks are going before them. They're fine. They feel like they have a lot of holes. I'm sure people are going to want to move up. They can still make a trade back, although I don't think they do that. I think they just grab an impact defensive player. Or if Tunsil drops to them, they love their lineman. They can just say, you know what, we're just going to take Tunsil, and we're going to have the best line again forever. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But they've really benefited from this whole draft process.
Yeah, and that was the question I was going to ask you. As a Giants fan, which of those guys would be the most frightening to you? And I think you're right. I think Ramsey is the guy you look at who would be the most frightening. Bosa is the guy that would fill the biggest need for Dallas. And they were sort of talking about that today during the press conference. I believe Stephen Jones and Jerry Jones had a press conference talking about the whole draft process, saying that Joey Bosa's suspension won't factor in. I'd go Ramsey if I were Dallas, but who knows if Ramsey will even be on the board, because the team that I look at that is the most interesting team is San Diego, and they are the clear winners here. Them and Dallas, but more so San Diego, because they pick first after the 2 quarterbacks. They have holes all over their roster, whether it be the offensive line. Yeah, they have King Dunlap and Joe Barksdale, who both are pretty decent players at tackle, but Dunlap is always hurt, and Barksdale only really did it last year. He's been a decent guy, but nothing that you can't upgrade on. They have holes at defensive line, where Corey Legit is the only guy. I mean, they did sign Brandon Kneebane, but Corey Legit and Brandon Kneebane are the only 2 above-average players there, and they still need an outside pass rush. Yeah, Melvin Ingram and Jeremiah Otachu are decent guys, but none of them scream to you stud. And then, of course, safety, they had the whole Eric Weddle situation. If I were them, I would take Ramsey, but I think they're going to take Buckner, as Sam said before. I think he had the best year of anybody on tape that I looked at. Pro Football Focus actually rates him as their number one prospect in the draft. I didn't really see anybody else that sort of came close to his grade. Yeah, that's a subjective thing more than anything, but it's still a good thing to have on your resume. So San Diego is going to control the way the whole draft goes, because if they take Buckner, then it's much more likely a guy like Tunsil or a guy like Stanley is going to be available for Cleveland at 8. And then who knows, maybe Tennessee jumps up there and then the whole draft explodes. But we're going to find out Thursday night, guys. The NFL draft is the best reality show on television, and it's only 2 days away. I'm psyched. Is there anything else you guys are looking for before I pack up and go?
Yeah, I just want to make two quick points. One on the San Diego pick. I also agree that I think they are leaning towards taking Buckner, but I think they should take Tunsil or Stanley just because of the division they're in. When you have to face Von Miller, Justin Houston, Khalil Mack, a total of 6 games in the season, I think it's pretty important to protect your quarterback and also hopefully help your run game with Melvin Gordon. And I wanted to talk about my Browns point again, just quickly. You guys are the consensus of these mock drafts, or people who talk about the draft say that there might be 10 really impactful or surefire picks possibly. With the Browns at 8, they could miss on one of their guys. They could not take the right guy. So by them trading back, I think it makes sense because, A, let's say a guy like Ezekiel Elliott is on the board, and they do need a running back. There are teams in this year's draft that need running back also, Bears, Miami. Those are teams that would possibly trade up, give them future picks, and next year's running back draft is loaded, probably the best running back draft in history with Fournette, Dalvin Cook, Nick Chubb possibly. So I just think Cleveland's so far away from contending that trading down is a very easy choice.
Right. And I don't think if you're a team like the Browns, who's going to want to have so many other holes on the roster, are going to want to invest such a high pick in a running back, especially this year when they have so many other holes on their roster. What about you, Sam? Yeah, you have any wisdom for us locked there up in your closet?
I guess my only thing to say is my prediction based on nothing at all is that the Giants end up drafting Miles Jack, and that would make me really happy. That's all I have to say.
I'm actually happy you brought him up. I forgot to mention him, but yeah, he's one of the more interesting figures in this draft because he is the modern NFL player. 3 downs, he could play any position, whether it be on the line and linebacker, even corner sometimes, and he even played offense in college. So I'd be very upset to have to watch him in blue for the rest of his career, especially as a Jets fan. James, is there anything else that you'd like to touch upon?
No, I think other than this will probably be a more active trading first day than what we've seen in the past couple. I just, like we've said so many times, there's like the top 10 and then it's a whole bunch of the same until – you know, later in the draft, and it's only going to take one team to kind of convince another two or three that, hey, we're definitely going after this guy, or we have some interest on the guy that you're interested in our pick, and, you know, you should move up and grab the guy you want, and, you know, there's going to be some panicked owners that are going to be taken advantage of.
Yeah, I think 18 to 22 is a very interesting spot for this draft, because I do think there's still be good players there. And, you know, players that are just as good as those 12 to 15 to 16 range. So I think that's a place where the draft will see teams trying to get to, you know, out of that lower teams.
Well, my Jets picking that in that spot. And I will be very, very, it'll be a very, very sad Thursday night for me if the Jets are one of those teams that trade up in the draft. Well, we're going to find out Thursday night. Stay tuned for another podcast, most likely coming out Friday morning, hosted by Pod Vader, talking about the first round. And Nick, next weekend, me and Nick are going to be hosting a podcast next weekend just to recap the whole draft. Thank you guys for listening. You could hit us up on Twitter at NFU Podcast, on Facebook at facebook.com/NFU Podcast, or you could send us an email at nextfanup@gmail.com. But until then, happy draft season, boys and girls, and we'll hear from you soon.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is 4 quarters long.